You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Larry Hardesty in for Chris Carlin at 1-800-919-3776. It's a Thursday night edition of the show. Thank you for riding with us. We're here until 10 o'clock, Giselle and I. Then Anita Marks will handle ESPN New York tonight for me here on 98.7 ESPN. Okay. Everybody's talking about it. I listened to the K show. They are psyched. They are battling. It's fascinating to me. We're looking at two teams that have a win each. But in this crazy thing that we call the NFC East, the winner tonight will have the same amount of wins as the top team in the division. Two. And everybody's telling me, and I've spoke to a couple of people today. I don't want to get your thoughts on the Giants from Giant fans. What do you think tonight? 1-800-919-3776. So I spoke to a couple of former Giants today. I spoke to a couple of folks. And the former Giants are like, well, you know, we love what we see. We're happy with the progress this Giants team is making under Joe Judge. They're better coached. You're seeing some adjustments. You're seeing some things that have improved. One of the things that you're seeing that has improved, really, ironically, is the defense. The defense is better than we thought. And we've had these conversations here before. And the reason why the defense is better than you thought is because the folks up front are doing a pretty good job in rushing the passer, so that they've taken some pressure off the secondary. Now, the issue with this Giants defense has been very simple. Third down is they're allergic to third down. Okay, they can't seem to get off the field when there's third down. Either they'll make a mistake, a penalty, or they'll allow a play to be completed, and they end up staying on the field. So that means to me that they need to do a little better job in adjustments before you get to third down. In other words, the third downs are very manageable for the offense. So you're not really sure what's coming on third down. And of course, there are exceptions. There have been a couple of third and more than 10 yards that have been completed. So you're frustrated about that. But I do think, all in all, from what you expected from this Giants defense, it has been better than what you thought. But going in tonight, it's about history, right? And we know Giants have lost 7 straight games to the Eagles, 11 of their last 12. But that's not with Joe Judge. And that's not with, I believe, a play caller in Jason Garrett that's pretty creative. Now, what he needs to do from an adjustment standpoint, in my humble opinion, is I think he needs to attack the end zone outside the red zone, because this team just stops. They fall apart in the red zone. And of course, I think that will be helped by getting Sterling Shepard back tonight. So that's going to give them some more versatility. It gives the Philadelphia defense another person to look at to defend. You've got Golden Tate. You've got Evan Engram. So I think, and of course, Darius Slayton. So I think this allows the Giants to possibly spread them out more, which means that hopefully they can get a ground game going other than Daniel Jones leading the team in rushing. Okay, maybe Deontay Freeman will have a game tonight where he can make a difference and make them, you know, not so predictable. So I think the Giants have a really good shot at winning this game tonight. I do. I think they have a really, really good chance. However, I am aware that DeSean Jackson is back for Philly. Not his first game back. So we're not sure just how well the chemistry is going to be with the two, with him and Carson Wentz, because this, as I mentioned, this is his first game back. So I'm not real sure how it's going to be. But I think obviously that's going to be a concern, because he does things to you defensively that you have to account for him. Lane Johnson, who had been injured, is back tonight on the offensive line. Excuse me. So that also helps Philadelphia. But I still think, all in all, the Giants have a really, really good shot at beating this Eagles team tonight. When you look at turnovers, especially from the quarterback position, they're both not good. Daniel Jones has got 6 interceptions, and Carson Wentz has 9 interceptions. The difference is Daniel Jones got thrown for three touchdowns. Carson Wentz has thrown for 8. So the biggest issue you have, if you're a Giant fan, on this game tonight is, can you find a way to get into the end zone? If you could find a way to get into the end zone more consistently, you would be happier. And you'd probably have some more confidence in the way your team would have a chance at winning tonight. Plus, you probably would have a couple more wins on your agenda, on your ledger, if indeed they were able to find the end zone. So that's one of the things that, you know, you're looking for. Here's a positive. Evan Engram has a touchdown in 3 of his past 4 games on the road against the NFC East. See, for me, he's been the forgotten man in the sense of they haven't been able to lock him in consistently. Some of it, he's had a couple of drops, he's had some misplays, but he just hasn't consistently made that big play that I think you look for. Obviously, one of the things that you respect about the Eagles is their defense. They put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And when you have a quarterback that has a penchant to turn over the football, as Daniel Jones has done, that's also a concern for you tonight. But I really think that this is going to be a closer game than a lot of people think it's going to be. I do. I think the Giants will have a chance to win it close. And the reason why I do is because of some of the things that I've mentioned earlier when I spoke to a couple of Giants, former Giants that I chatted with today. And that is, you like the way that Joe Judge has gotten this team going. You like the way that he's disciplined them. You like the way that they are playing better. And you see improvement with them. Week after week, you see improvement. Are there things they still need to work on? Of course. Are there things that they can't overcome because of talent or depth in certain situations? Absolutely. If they had, you know, some other players or some other more depth, you'd feel happy about them. If the offensive line would give you some consistency in how they play, you would feel better. Because really, I think Daniel Jones, his accuracy is still good. You still are confident that he can complete a pass where it needs to go. Your biggest, and he takes off, he can run with the football. Needs to slide a little bit earlier, but he can run with the football. So the intangibles is you just really want him to make sure that he holds on to the football and that he takes what the defense gives him and not try to make a play. And see, there's a double-edged sword there. All right, so when I say make a play, I mean try to force something. Obviously, we want the quarterback to make a play. That's why he's in there. But make the play that's the safe play, not the play that you think is there when it's not there. Trying to force it to a receiver with 3 people around him, not the way to go. Not the way to go. This is a big game for the Giants' offensive line. They need to be able to block, to run the football some, and they need to be able to give Daniel Jones some time to look and complete some passes. And I do expect that Jason Garrett is going to do some of the things that he's done early in the season, and that is change the tempo of the offense. Sometimes no huddle. Sometimes you'll huddle after 2 or 3 plays. I think if he does that, that will help keep the Philadelphia Eagles defense off balance, which is a key for the Giants to win tonight. All right, what do you say?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. Once I was 20 years old, my story got told. This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Larry Hardesty for Chris Carlin, second hour of the show. Thanks for stopping by. 1-800-919-3776. Also on Twitter at Hardesty ESPN at ESPNNY 98_7 FM. We talk football in the first hour, and of course, we'll get you and keep you updated on the Giants and Eagles. But right now, let's turn our attention to Major League Baseball. We are the home of the World Series, and the World Series taking a day off today. They will resume with Game 3 tomorrow. You can hear it right here on 98.7 ESPN. So to talk a little World Series, to talk about the Yankees, talk a little baseball, I called on my friend, outstanding writer for the Daily News, does a tremendous job covering the Yankees. She is Christy Ackert. Hey, Christy, how are you?
I'm good, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. So, Christy, as you look at the first two games of the World Series before we pick your brain about the Yankees and what they're going to do, which of the two games is the Tampa Bay that you've seen most of all this year in covering the Yankees? Was it Game 1 or Game 2?
Oh, definitely Game 2. yeah, you know, that first game, it didn't really look like them at all. It just looked like they were a little overwhelmed. Clearly Glasnow was a little bit overwhelmed. They're a much tougher team than that. And one of the things that is interesting about them, I think last year going toe-to-toe with the Astros in the division series, going to the, you know, final game, I think that taught them a lot about taking a punch and then getting back up. And I think that's what you saw in Game 2.
How well do you think they'll do in this series? Do they have a chance to beat the Dodgers, the best team money can buy?
You know, I think that's tough. I think the Dodgers lineup is really tough, and you're going to need to get great performances from Snell, Glasnow, and Morton to do that. I don't know that they can get that. I think they'll give them a fight, but it's going to be hard to beat the Dodgers. They're just, you know, like you said, the best team money can buy.
But I think the one thing that gives them a chance, Christy, is their bullpen. I mean, I've watched the Yankees, and you covered them all year. I mean, they've got – they just like they print them in the factory. They bring them out. They're 6 foot six, 6'7". They throw 101 miles an hour and a curve that drops off a table.
The stable. you know, yeah, and that's true. You know, that's a good point. And it's something the Dodgers haven't seen. You know, I mean, that's one thing about these playoffs. You know, it was – all these teams didn't see each other. Like, you know, Shane Bieber was the greatest pitcher in the world, and we went and saw him pitch against the Yankees, and I was like, excuse me? So, yeah, I think that's part of the quirk of this year is that the Dodgers, yeah, they can scout them. They don't know what it's like to face the fact that they can bring those guys in, and you won't even be able to tell the difference between them because they'll just be, you know, shoving at you.
Last thing about the World Series, Christy, how ironic is it that they get not one but two off days, even though they're not traveling? I mean, if they had done that in the League Championship Series, who knows? Maybe the Yankees would have found a way to get to the World Series.
Absolutely. I hope they're at least changing hotel rooms.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that was a huge thing about this playoff series. And I think had they made the point that that was going to happen before the trade deadline, you would have seen a lot more action, particularly with the Yankees. Yeah, that makes a huge difference, and that helps the Rays a little bit too.
All right, Christy, let's talk about this Yankee team because everybody's got their idea about what they want to do, who's got to go, who can stay, other than Boone. We're talking players. So obviously the first thing, Christy, is, and I know you know, having worked with you, I know you do your due diligence in talking to different people and doing gathering information for your articles. Can somebody give you an idea? Does anybody have a tangible reason why Gary Sanchez has just dropped off the face of the earth offensively, that he now can't hit the fastball? When he came up his first year, we were calling him Babe Sanchez. He was hitting the ball out of the ballpark all the time.
You know, the only thing that keeps coming back to that is consistent with people outside the organization that seem to be watching him. You know, the thing that I keep hearing is it doesn't look like he knows what's coming. Like, it's like he's not identifying what the pitches are. And you'll hear that every once in a while, you know, oh, pitch recognition. And you could see it in some of his swings. I mean, they were just completely – he looked completely lost. And that's when he can't tell what's coming. That's something you don't – normally hear about a guy who's been in the big leagues this long. So, I mean, it's a little confounding. Part of me wonders, and this year, because you don't have a chance to really talk to people one-on-one, it's hard to tell. Part of me wonders if the lack of having the video room access was hurting him. Hmm. You know, usually between, you know, at-bats, you can go back into the video room, you can look at your previous at-bat, you can see what was happening. Because of the Astros, they ruled that out. And I, part of me wonders if some of that wasn't some of that. And if it was a normal year and I was working the clubhouse, I clearly would have dug into that a little deeper, but we haven't really had the chance to do that.
Yeah. And he's a guy, Christy, who struggles with knowing what his strike zone is anyway. So a guy who has an inconsistent strike zone and then is guessing wrong, would that would give a reason why he's batting 175.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I think that partly goes into the pitch recognition thing too, because I think sometimes he gets a little desperate to, you know, find that pitch. He looked completely lost. And by the end of the year, there was no justifiable reason to put him out there. And I have not seen a player struggle like that and drop that far off the, you know, the depth chart in years of covered baseball.
So what do the Yankees do, Christy? Do they give up on him? Do they go out and try to get a JT Realmuto? Do they go out and do they say, okay, we'll give him one more shot? I mean, or is this a scenario where Hal Steinbrenner says, no, I'm not doing anything. You fix the guys you got on him. I'm not spending another dime.
I think you might have hit the nail on the head there. I don't think, you know, all indications are that, one, they haven't set their budget for next year. But the indications are it's not going to be high. And, you know, even last year before the pandemic and before all of this, you know, Hal Steinbrenner was talking about signing Gerrit Cole and saying, well, you know, we've got a lot of contracts coming off the books next year. So they was already looking at saving money. I don't see them going out and making a big play for JT Realmuto. I don't see that right now. I think it goes against smart business to trade Gary right now. You're trading him low. I mean, but you do have to fix him. You do have to find a way to use him. They're in a bind. And then you also have the idea of a long view of this is a weird season. How much do you put into what you saw in 60 games?
Yeah, that's interesting. Boy, Brian Cashman's got his work cut out for him, as always, right?
I think he's got his work cut out for him this year, probably more than in the last few years.
Interesting. Christy Ackert's my guest, covers the Yankees for the Daily News. It's Larry Harstein for Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. Speaking of money, I mean, I would think that you would find a couple of pennies for DJ LeMahieu, who's been arguably your best all-around player the past 2 years. But then is there an amount that maybe the Yankees won't go? I mean, if somebody says 4 years, $25 million per, you pulling that trigger on a guy who's like, what, 31, 32?
I think he just turned 32. I'm not giving him 4 years at $25 million. I don't know that he would get that. I mean, the other thing you have to think about this year is other teams suffered losses too. Mm-hmm. So we don't know where their free agent money is going to come. Now, there may be some teams out there that take advantage of this. If they have the money, they may go out and, you know, be like bargain shopping. Mm-hmm. I say, you know, I've talked to a few executives about LeMahieu. They think he's going to get 20 per, mm-hmm. at least three. So, I mean, I'd go there if I were the Yankees. I would absolutely go there. I'd go there 4 years with him. At 20, but I think he's so important to that team. He's crucial to that lineup. He's crucial to, you know, the defense because of his versatility. I would go there for him. Now, I don't know if they will, but I think you have to.
All right, Christy, let's have a little fun here. I'm gonna give you some names. You give me chances of them returning or having a serious role next season. How about that? Having a serious role on the team next season. All right.
Okay.
Luke Voit, is he coming back? Is he going to be traded?
You know, as I said, you don't trade low. You could trade high, too. That would be a heck of a flip. I could see them doing that for payroll flexibility and defensive flexibility.
Will Luis Severino ever start for the Yankees again?
I think he will. I think he will. And I think actually, you know, unfortunately for me, I started covering them in 2018 at the end of the year. And I've never really seen him at his best. You know, I came over from covering the Mets where I saw DeGrom start every 5 days, you know. So I've never really seen him at his, you know, where everybody was talking about him as, you know, a DeGrom-type pitcher. So I'm hoping so. I think you will see him play a big role at the end of next year, yeah.
Jay Happ, is he back?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he wants to be back. I don't think the Yankees want him back at this point.
Paxton, is he back?
I don't. Oof, that's a tough one because you could probably re-sign him. I would have to say that his price tag is probably going to be smaller than he thought because of the injuries going into free agency. But the Yankees know the most about his medical history, so I can't even guess on that one.
Yeah. This is going to be weird, but I just keep hearing how people are starting to now wonder and get really disenchanted with him because of big hits and big games that sent them home. What is the deal with Aroldis Chapman? Is he losing something? Is there a situation where he might not be a closer? Would they move him out of that closer spot?
You got to wonder about it, right? The last two seasons have ended with him on the mound, basically. I don't think they will. Certainly Brian Cashman said that he has no issue with it and he sees him as his closer. If I were them, I would basically be looking to make sure that Zach Britton is still here. Mm-hmm. And, then you go into that role of telling your bullpen it's not what inning you pitched in, and maybe you flip them on those big games once in a while just to see how Britton does. Yeah, you got to worry about that. And it's not just these two home runs. He gave up a pretty big home run when he was with the Cubs to Rajay Davis, too.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Christy, last thing. If there was one move you would think that the Yankees would try to look for, would it be something along the lines of an everyday player who could hit from the left-handed side of the plate to give them another contact hitter? Because they've got a lot of these home run guys who don't always make contact, and it seems to – you know, during the postseason, Christy helped send them home early.
Absolutely, because you're facing better pitching. Yeah, I think that would be a great move. I think they do need some more balance in that lineup. It's heavily right-handed, heavily power-hitting, and really streaky at times. Yeah, I mean, that would be a great move for them. Now, whether they're going to go out and do it, I don't know.
Christy, thanks for playing. I don't know what the heck the Yankees are going to do, but I'll come up with an answer anyway.
Always a pleasure.
Enjoy your offseason while you can, because they'll be making moves soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks,
Larry. All right, take care. All right, bye-bye.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. It's not this way.
Honesty for Carlin. On Carlin, on 98.7 ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. Of course, we'll keep you updated on the Giants and Eagles about to kick off down in Philadelphia. Taking your phone calls on what the Yankees and Mets should do, what are their top priorities. And while I asked Christy Ackert of the Daily News about the Yankees with JT Realmuto, excuse me, I want JT Realmuto for the Mets. Now, I don't know whether, you know, what the income's going to be with Steve Cohen and all that scenario. And I must admit to you that in watching baseball and football, free agency doesn't all the time work as it does in the NBA. Right? When you look in the NBA, you can see, to get to the calls in a minute, you can see in the NBA that you can see the impact of a big time free agent right away. Because you can take a player or two. And because of the way the sport is, you can see their influence on a game where they can take a game over right away. you can see what a LeBron James brings to a team right away. You can see what a James Harden could bring to a team right away. You could see what a Russell Westbrook could bring to a team right away. You can see what a Kevin Durant will bring to a team right away. You've got the elite players in the National Basketball Association, and they make an impact wherever they go. And you just add pieces around them, okay? Because baseball and football are such team sports, yes, they're individuals, but they're in the, they have, because there's so many pieces, they have less and less influence on a team in a lot of situations. You have to be very careful. Now, for me as a Met fan, I need a guy like Realmuto to help anchor my pitching staff and to improve my pitching staff, improve my defense, help to throw out some runners, and also give me some offense. Okay, so he provides a lot of different things for me. And for me, that would be one of the things that I would like to see them do, is make some moves to improve this team defensively. Because to be honest, this was not a bad team offensively last season. During the 60-game stretch, it was not a bad team. From the offensive side of the baseball, they were not bad. Now, defensively, yes, they had issues. There's no question about that. Bullpen, inconsistent, yes. And the starting rotation, because you gambled a little bit and you lost, you know, Marcus Stroman because of the COVID situation where he said he didn't want to participate, which was his right. You know, that was a difference. And I saw in a couple of published reports, I think it was in the Post, I don't remember who wrote it, about the fact that he's lobbying to join the Yankees, which he always wanted to do. But I think if the Yankees do anything, they'll go with Trevor Bauer as a starter rather than Marcus Stroman, but you never know. And I know they got this thing with Cole and him having some issues and whatnot. Look, it's about winning. You'll be surprised. Guys find a way to work things out when it's about winning and getting the job done. So, but for the Mets, that's what I'd like to see. And, of course, I'd like to see some stability in that outfield. I'd like to see a center fielder who, you know, going in is going to be a guy that's going to play every day, okay, and play and have a really solid defensive center field. I mean, I know we got sabermetrics. I know all the stuff we have about it's about home runs, strikeouts. Ooh, I don't care. It's about being productive at bat, you know, all that stuff. For me, the defense in baseball never changes. You give me a team that is pretty strong up the middle, okay, and I'll show you a team that's going to win more games than they lose, because defense matters. You look in the postseason, defense matters. You look at Altuve having throwing issues in the Houston series with Tampa. Defense matters. You can't, when you get to the postseason, at any time, but especially when you get to the postseason, you cannot be in the position where you're giving extra, really good teams extra outs to hurt you with. Can't do it. You just cannot do it. And so if the Mets are going to take that next step, part of it has got to be defensively, and the other part of it has got to be to lock in that bullpen so that you have some depth with people you can depend on. And you hope that your offense continues to play like it did and put some runs on the board. Because if they can put some runs on the board, they're going to win some games. But I need them to be better defensively. That would help.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. Yeah. It's just me, myself, and I. Solo ride. This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Hard to see for Carlin, hour number 3 on 98.7 ESPN. Anita Marks follows us at 10 o'clock. She's doing ESPN New York tonight here on 98.7 ESPN, filling in for me. 1-800-919-3776. Giants and Eagles tied at 7. Eagles on the march as they end the first quarter down at the Giant 30-yard line. So we'll keep you updated on that Giants-Eagles score. Once again, I'm on record as saying I believe the Giants have a very good chance at winning this game tonight. Let's turn our attention to the NBA. We are about 3 weeks away from the draft that's going to be held in our home in Bristol, Connecticut, NBA draft. And I was driving the other day, and I was listening to J. Will and Bart and Han. As a matter of fact, it was Han Solo that day. And they were discussing Knicks, as they usually do. And I have two schools of thought here. And see if you follow me. I understand what Russell Westbrook brings to the table. I do. I understand what a possible free agent or player that you want to try to build your young team around would bring to the table. I understand from the Knicks standpoint. Now, I'm not talking about as a fan. I understand from the Knicks standpoint that you are tired of losing. Okay? The fans may be ready for a full-fledged rebuild. They may be ready to just build through the draft. I got it. You, on the other hand, right now, want to have something where you are being competitive and pushing to at least have a playoff spot. Because you are sharing the city with the Brooklyn Nets, who are now ready to trot out Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and possibly, depending on who you believe and what you read, where I'm hearing Caris LeVert, possibly for Bradley Beal. So they're looking for a third person to have a big three Brooklyn style. So you're sharing the market with a team that you have not been competitive with for the past 3-4 seasons, minimum. A team that's gone to the postseason in back a year ago and could have, you know, made it this year without a bunch of injuries. And so you're looking to see if indeed you've got the opportunity to try to have a life, to have some competition. That's what you're trying to do. That's what you want to do. Okay? A Nets team that's gone to the postseason back-to-back years. A Knicks team that hasn't smelt the postseason since 2015. I hadn't even thought about it. And it may have been longer than that. I'm hoping it's 2015. It might be 2013. I don't remember. It's been forever since they've been to the postseason. And so from that standpoint, I get where you want to say, listen, let's try to make a deal to bring somebody in here to make us relevant, to help us with these young players so that they can get a taste of what being successful is like, that they can get a taste of what winning is like, so they can get a taste of what the postseason is like. Even if it means we go to an 8th seed and we're out in the first round, at least we will have made the postseason and we can see what we've got with these players. Now, Chris Paul was mentioned by a number of people. And as I've said before, I love Chris Paul. Chris Paul is going to go down as one of the top point guards in the history of the NBA. And this year, Chris Paul was as healthy as he's been in the past couple of seasons. But for the money I'm going to pay for Chris Paul, if I'm a Knick, I don't want to pay that money. Okay, I don't want to. And I get it. And I understand that there are some who say, well, listen, you got free agent money. You got to spend the money anyway. Okay, but why can't I spend it wisely? And that's where Russell Westbrook's name has come up. Now, I know the folks in Houston are saying that, you know, we're not even thinking about moving Russell Westbrook. But now that, you know, the GM is out, maybe there's a possibility that you'd be able to get something for him. And look, we're not talking about people that are on the current roster. Reggie Bullock, Wayne Ellington, Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina. Do I need to go on? Elfrid Payton. How about Bobby Portis? Julius Randle, who you would wish somebody would take off your hands. Bobby Portis, $15 million. $15 million. So I get that. But when you look at these folks, you're not getting quality for these players. Okay? You're going to have to give up some draft choices. There's no question you are. And then you're going to have to give some players because, you know, the deals have to match. You know, the NBA, where the salaries have to be at least close in the same ballpark. So here's Russell Westbrook's salary over the next 3 years. Okay? This season, he's at age 32, $41.4 million. Going into 21-22, $44.2 million, and in 22-23 at age 34, he'll make $47.1 million. Here's the positives of Russell Westbrook. He is an energizer bunny. He will push the basketball. He is a one-man fast break. He is a guy who looks for other people. He is a walking triple-double at the guard position. He can score. He can create any shot he wants. He can put the ball on the deck and go to the basket. And he can look for other people. And he's a rebounding guard. He is an outstanding player. There is no denying that. But for me, am I ready as a Knick, front office, am I ready to put that amount of money into one player when I'm not one or two players away? Here's what Jay Will had to say to Alan Hahn on Barton Hahn the other day about Russell Westbrook becoming a Knick.
It would be good to see a superstar back in New York City claiming New York City. And here's the one thing I would say to anybody that says, hey, we just want to build it through the draft. Who knows how long that can take, Alan? But if there's a star like Russell Westbrook that says, I believe in this franchise, I believe in Leon Rose, I'm spending time with Dolan, it's different, and this is my city, and I want people to come here and be a part of it, I think that type of mindset would be incredible. Now, I'm not sure Russell Westbrook will want to do that at this stage in his career. I think he wants to win a championship. But if he were willing to do that, if you're willing to pull that off, if you're able to get a trade for that, if he were to own it like that, I think that – but I wouldn't want a disgruntled employee, though. I wouldn't want somebody who wouldn't want to be here.
All right. Now, in the same conversation, Alan Hahn really agrees with Jay Will, but has this summation.
I believe the Knicks will have a very quiet offseason. It's going to be a very uncertain, very long offseason. We don't know when they're going to play. They might not play till March. And with that in mind, because there's a lot of uncertainty for next season, the Knicks lost the second most amount of money off last year because they didn't finish the season. So they lost a ton of money. That I have a strange feeling that you will not see a lot of activity with this roster. That they will almost wait through one more year, man, and then go into 21 with a ton of cap space, another high pick, and then maybe make their move then.
Free agents in 2021. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Anthony Davis, CJ McCollum, Bradley Beal, restricted free agents, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, players with a player option, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Chris Paul, and Blake Griffin. Which do you believe will the Knicks, which road do you believe the Knicks will follow? Will it be the Jay Will road where they will try to make a move for a Russell Westbrook? Or will it be the Alan Hahn role of, hey, you know what? They're probably not going to do anything but stand pat and draft. Which would you prefer right now?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.